We are the space robots. We are here to protect you. Back, Cooey, us. Back, Cooey, us. Back, Cooey, us.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm the Pusher Robot.
And I'm the Shover Robot.
And we're here to protect you from the terrible secret of space.
Indeed, indeed. Space has a terrible power.
And the power is, of course, the meteors that it keeps hurtling right at us, which is a little bit problematic.
Don't you mean asteroids?
Yeah, okay. So let's get some definitions down before we start this off, because I had to look this up before we did this recording, because I couldn't remember them either. So there are four kinds of celestial bodies. There are four names for the same kind of celestial body. So an asteroid is a chunk of rock that is out in space, presumably orbiting the sun, that has no visible tail or comma. A comet is that same body, but it has a visible tail. Usually that's because it's made of different compounds, but occasionally it could just be, you know, the same kinds of compounds. It just is in an orbit where it shows the tail.
It's got some volatiles on it that can be burning off when it gets closer to the sun, so you get that nice nucleus inside of a comet, usually ice, we presume, and some other volatile materials.
Good ice stuff or some kind of particulate dust or something like that. It makes them a heck of a lot prettier to look at than straight-up asteroids, I would say. So when one of these things, these chunks of rocks, get closest to the Earth, it enters the atmosphere and it becomes a meteor, which is the light emitted as it's coming down towards the Earth. If it burns up completely on its way down, it's just considered a meteor. But if a chunk of it makes it to the Earth below and actually hits the surface, that's what we call a meteorite. So the meteorites are generally the ones that we care about. Meteors, if they get down far enough and then explode, those are ones we also care about because they generally shower us in meteorites. But asteroids and comets are the space-borne things. So bear that in mind while we go on this discussion today about near-Earth objects and you.
Indubitably.
So let's start off here with a little bit of history of the Earth getting hit with space rocks. Some of the oldest...
It's been going on for a while.
Yeah, several million years. The earliest ones that we see physical evidence about, which were, of course, after the Earth's crust had more or less settled into the configuration that we're at right now, was the Vredefort crater in Africa and the Sudbury Basin in Canada, both of which are pretty much part of the landscape these days. Those were both around 3.5 billion years ago, give or take. The most famous asteroid impact, or meteorite impact, is the Chicxulub extinction event meteorite. See, I'm still screwing it up. That's the one that presumably wiped out the dinosaurs. It's the one that crashed near the Yucatan Peninsula in Latin America and caused the global firestorms and tsunamis and such that destroyed the ecology for several decades and possibly led to the extinction of all giant lizards. So
those poor lizards.
That is the biggest one that has affected our current history. Some other notable ones are the Papagei crater in Russia, which is one of the largest diamond repositories in the country, and presumably they were all deposited there from that meteorite impact. That happened about 36-ish million years ago, and you can still see the physical evidence of it today. Even more recent than that is the Tunguska event, as mentioned in one of our previous episodes. That was 1908. It leveled 80 million trees. It's one of those meteors that exploded before it made contact in total with the Earth's surface. It showered meteorites pretty much everywhere. And despite the fact that it was such a huge explosion, I have to go off on an aside and say that I was surprised to learn that that is 2/5 or so the magnitude of the last big nuclear device that was test detonated by Russia, the Tsar bomb.
Yeah, the Tsar bomb.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy.
Megatons? Yeah. It's a little big.
Yeah. I'm glad that that was never actually used. I don't think we would have whatever country it was laid on anymore.
tried to make a bigger one, but they couldn't find the problem. I know a tangent, but they tried to make a bigger one, but they couldn't design a plane that could drop it and escape the fallout.
Yeah. You know, suicide mission. It's all good. I mean, it's basically a suicide mission if you're dropping something that's got that much destructive force on the Earth's surface, because that's repercussions that'll be felt across the globe. I guarantee it.
That's pretty true.
And the last one that we've got is even more recent. This is just a few years ago. The Chelyabinsk. Chelyabinsk. I'm afraid I don't speak Russian very well. They get the most. They get the most meteors and meteorites just because they own the largest chunk of land on the Earth, I guess. But
well, Africa's bigger, but I mean.
Yeah, but you know, many different nations versus Russia. Just,
yes, yes.
You know,
I understand.
Having the Siberia.
That's true.
That one was another one that exploded and injured about 1,500 people. So that's just kind of a taste of how destructive an asteroid coming too close to Earth can be, and how much, you know, meteorite impacts are global events for the most part.
Right. If I could briefly also bring up the Barringer Crater. I spent some time in Arizona, as you did as well, in our younger years. And this one's right outside of Flagstaff. It's pretty freaking cool. The crater's about a mile across, and it's one of the most well-preserved craters in the entire world that you can actually go today and see. And that's because it's relatively young. It's only about, I think, about 50,000 years old since it impacted. But this mile-wide crater is huge. I mean, it's you get up there, and you pay some fee, and it's like, oh, museum and stuff. But, man, it's a humbling thought to think. Because the actual impact body, the meteorite, was only about 160 feet across, and it was an iron nickel meteorite. So that's not a huge, not a big thing. I mean, golly, that's, you know, half the size of a football field, just about. I want to say, ish. And it detonated with about the force of 10 megatons and left behind a mile wide crater that we can still see today, 50,000 years later. So it's pretty crazy to think about.
Yeah, if there was ever a terrible secret of space, I would say that this would be the one of the more terrible secrets. We might get into some of the other ones in later episodes, but as far as things that are coming knocking at our door, meteorites are a huge problem.
Indeed.
Or a potential problem. So where you can see the current hazards, NASA and JPL are the ones who track this sort of thing, at least in our country. They maintain a website repository of this at neo.jpl.nasa.gov, which lists the current known asteroids that are in our system and their likelihood of impacting the Earth, as well as their relative size. So, fortunately, from checking it as of the airing of this podcast, we have mostly too small to really care about on the scale, and we also have zeros on the Torino impact hazard scale. And for those that don't know or are unfamiliar with the Torino impact hazard scale, it's a 0 to 10 rating on which we base if an asteroid is going to come near Earth and the scientific community gives it a probability for how likely it is to impact the Earth, then the Torino impact hazard scale rates it on how likely that estimate is to change, and if it's going to change against our favor, as in the asteroid is going to come a little too close for comfort, how much damage it could possibly cause if it hit the Earth. So it's basically a how much should you be panicking right now scale.
Mm-hmm. And it's a lot easier to understand than when you're talking about, oh, it's got a 1 in 25,000 chance of hitting the Earth, which in that case, that'd be a very, very likely. And that'd probably actually elicit a Torino scale in the, like, at least by 5 or 6, because 1 in 2,500 chance is pretty pretty stinking huge. It's a big chance.
Yeah.
Just for perspective, Apophis, the asteroid Apophis, which you heard about, I think it's supposed to come swinging really close to us in 2032, has a 1 in 250,000 chance of smacking the Earth. And that seems... Yeah, 25... Yeah, 250,000 chance. And you might say to yourself, you know, that's got a... You know, you divide 1 by that big number, and you got a lot of zeros there. It's a pretty small percentage. But you put it in perspective, and I know this might not be the perfect analogy, but your chances of winning the lottery are 1 in... 258 million, but somebody always wins the lottery. So it's not really a matter of if this thing's going to come hit us, it's just a matter of when. And if we're prepared for it at that time, because
yeah.
the every time it comes by a little bit closer, we perturb it a little bit. Its orbit gets a little bit changed, and that's why we change these probabilities, because it's not just a perfect three-body problem. It's a multi-body problem. As the asteroids go out and they come back in, they're influenced by Jupiter's gravitational field, the suns, all the planets, other asteroids. It's simple and complex things change it. It's why it's in done. It's done in odds. You can't really give it exact. Yeah, it's going to hit us that day, this time, and it's always going to be plus or minus, and within some error boundaries there as well.
Yeah, and you know, any large body moving through our system certainly merits study, because there's always forces in space that we aren't super familiar with, such as dark matter, that influence different things in different ways, and sometimes we're not completely familiar with the mechanics of that. And anything that could be a potential danger to Earth is definitely worth keeping an eye on, just in case it mm-hmm. does decide to swing our way.
Absolutely.
So, in the realm of this, of course, we have NASA, the ESA, any other space agencies out there. They're monitoring these kinds of things, as well as a cadre of backyard astronomers. Anybody who's got a telescope powerful enough is, of course, welcomed in the community to track and monitor these different asteroids. Some of the more recent findings are, of course, ones that people who, you know, go out every evening, take a look, and monitor the position of celestial bodies. They notice these things and report them in to be put on the hazard list. But once they're identified, you know, we got to do something about them, especially if they are a serious case. Mm-hmm. And that isn't always the most simple of processes.
No, it's not. I mean, the first thing that you got to do, though, is just like you said, you got to find them. And NASA's Grand Challenge, which is with that grassroots program that you're talking about, they started up a couple years ago. Basically, it's like a wiki website of, hey, I found this asteroid, or here's its trajectory. We think this is a new thing. I think that's a really, really positive step in the right direction, because the more eyes you have looking up into the sky, the better chances are you have of detecting an asteroid, or a comet or what have you coming at you. And the hard thing is you can't really do anything about it if you don't see it. So that's a very, very important, first step in being able to defeat any incoming, celestial body that's going to give us a little smack. It's being able to find it. And I think right now they're tracking mostly the larger objects, you know, 1 kilometer and larger. Is that right?
Yeah. Back in 1998, if I'm not mistaken, they had a survey challenge that was a 10-year survey challenge to find all asteroids that were 1 kilometer or larger that could potentially impact the Earth in the next 100 years, at least, you know, that they could see at that point. And they finished it a little bit late, but they cataloged all of the ones at that time that, and found that there weren't any potential threats in the bunch. And now they're on a secondary follow-up study that began in 2005. They want to catalog 90% of all the asteroids that are 140 meters or larger by 2020. And I know that they're falling behind on that program, mostly because of budget cuts that we've been fairly familiar with seeing in the news anytime that NASA or space is involved, unfortunately.
Right. And it's interesting, too, because, I mean, that the Barringer crater, meteor crater, that was an object that was only 160 feet across in diameter. And that caused a 10 megaton equivalent detonation when it hit the Earth.
Yeah, and it's hard to judge an asteroid's impact just based off of size alone, because obviously the composition of the meteorite, if it is to impact the Earth's surface, plays a huge factor. Obviously,
absolutely.
Something that's made of ice that impacts the Earth is not going to have the same kind of oomph that something that is made of, you know, platinum or diamond is going to when it impacts mm-hmm. the Earth.
Right, like the Barringer crater, that was an iron nickel asteroid, or meteorite. Goodness gracious, there we go with the proper terms. Well, it was an asteroid until it hit the atmosphere, and then it was a meteor, and then it became a meteorite.
Yep.
But neither here nor there.
Point is, it hit. It hit hard.
It hit. It did. But yeah, it's interesting, and you have to think about the compositions too, because essentially you have those solid asteroids out there, but you also have gravel piles or rock piles. And, you know, it's just basically held together by the local gravity of their collective mass. But it's nothing more than a giant heap of gravel or larger stones out in space. But this is also gonna, this goes into what you're gonna be able to do to defeat that threat. You know, how are you gonna be able to interdict that asteroid coming at you or comet?
Yeah, for the piles of gravel ones, I would suggest a sturdy shovel. But everything else, the larger, more dense, more coherent asteroids that are out there, when we find them, as we understand it right now, we have three options. One of which is to go all Armageddon Day on it and plant a bomb on it when it's still a sufficient distance out, detonate it, and alter the trajectory of the asteroid via that method. Conservation of momentum, that sort of thing. The next one, of course, is to attach a large engine to it, send up some kind of space shuttle or other kind of rocket, clamp onto the asteroid, and push it away, or go all deep impact style on it and just ram something into it hard enough that it alters its trajectory to not strike the Earth. And the last one that I was reading up on that I thought was really hilarious was that we go out there and we paint it a very reflective color, and we allow the pressure of photons to gradually shift it out of the direction it's currently heading. And, well, I don't think that one is going to be particularly successful, and indeed, nobody seems to be doing a whole lot of research on that front, because, you know, painting an asteroid, it's still kind of cool that was something we thought of to fix the problem.
Can you imagine being the guy at the meeting? You're at NASA, right? And you're a genius rocket scientist, and you're expert in the field, and everyone's, you know, you're at this conference table. They're like, there are no bad ideas. Everybody, we need to think of something quick. I got an idea. Jim, what do you got for us? Let's paint it. And then just silence.
Just everybody crickets. Not even the crickets. They're just like,
I brought some color swaths. I think the mauve will look real nice.
Yeah. And as we've been seeing recently, to expound kind of to the side, is that space travel and space exploration is, of course, becoming more privatized. Government support for these industries is falling as we turn our attention towards more domestic problems here at home. And so I am fervently hoping that we'll see something from Virgin Galactic or SpaceX that is maybe an emergency outline that, hey, in case we do see something that is really horrible, we have some kind of plan to deal with it. I haven't seen anything quite to that effect at the moment, since they're really just getting off the ground. Don't you?
Literally.
Yeah.
Whoa, that went over like a fart church.
I hate puns. But the bottom line, I suppose, is that it's quite costly to operate these kinds of asteroid detection and avoidance programs. Some sources are estimating around $200 million per year between now and 2025. Where we would have to spend, you know, boatloads. For comparison, the government only spends about $100 million a year on the total rebuilding and repair for the Federal Highway Administration, like after a natural disaster. So it's a huge government commitment to forward this kind of money. But fortunately, we have this private sector who, through Kickstarter and their other funds, are able to fund these kind of endeavors.
Absolutely. I mean, shoot, I mean, golly, though. $100 million isn't a whole lot, but when you think about it, you know, how much the F-35 costs. I mean, the program right now, I think, is in development for $59 billion.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Maybe you should just run one of those into the asteroids.
Be a little bit easier. That's an idea. I don't know. That might be up there with the painting the asteroid one.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, the good thing is, and I know we talked about this in one of our previous episodes with Space Resources, but asteroid mining is actually a twofer. You're winning both by being able to get materials from space and also the same technologies that you use to develop this resource are going to be the same ones you can use to defend the Earth against an asteroid. So, you know, you say you go out there and you want to rendezvous with an asteroid to go mine it. It's the same technology you'd use to go out there and, say, plant a rocket on it or a bomb or what have you. Solar sails, all sorts of cool things. So really, we can't discount the planetary resources or deep space industries at this point in time, though their programs right now are mostly in the Kickstarter and Man, I Have a Dream phase. in the future, I think that this is definitely something considering serious investment and thought, not only for the benefit of the private sector of industrializing space, but also for the sake that it can prevent an extinction event. I mean, you think about it with, you know, there are thousands upon thousands of objects out in space floating around, hurling around, and we don't know where they all are. We have only found right now about 1,000 potentially dangerous near-Earth asteroids that are kind of higher on the scale, and there's still like ones and zeros on the other scale. But you think about it, and there's a whole bunch of ones that we don't know, like ones that were like that could have created the Barringer crater. Something that small, we don't have the telescopes or the ability to detect things that small floating around in space just because they don't reflect that much light back to us. And shoot, there could be something heading for us right now. We don't know that, and that's kind of frightening.
Yeah, by developing these
technologies now, we're able to get a head start, or at least get caught up to where we should be. You think about the dinosaurs, and you think about where we are. What's the difference between us and the dinosaurs? Well, the dinosaurs didn't have a space program, at least none that we know of. That'd be kind of interesting, wouldn't it?
That'd be kind of weird.
There was an episode in Star Trek Voyager, but I mean, that's going into the realm of science fiction a little bit too heavily for the topic.
I don't know. I think that it would be real cool if we waited for a big one to come and get real close to Earth, and then we send out the little thing, you know, nudge it into an orbit, and we just capture the asteroid that way. Just be like, nope, and just grab it and then start mining the heck out of it. You know,
that'd be interesting. Absolutely.
Two wrongs make a right.
Yeah, if we were able to catch it out far enough, we certainly could do something very similar to that. And but right now, though, you know, we don't have a space program that could defeat an asteroid or could interdict it, given anything less than 10 years. 10-20 years right now is what we're looking at. And if we found an asteroid within that time frame, we'd be okay. But if something's going to hit us in, say, 5 years, I hate to say it, but we're a little bit woefully unprepared.
Yeah.
And, that's not something that you're just going to come out over the news and say, you're not going to hear about it on CNN. Because people probably don't react very well to, hey, in 5 years from now, it's going to be a bad day.
Yeah.
But, man, so we need to get this technology up there, because space has a terrible power.
Yeah, so what can you, the listeners, do to help? Well, you can, you know, lobby the government, obviously. There are debates about this happening all the time. Anytime, you know, budgeting about space gets brought up, inevitably somebody brings up the asteroid argument of, well, we need a good space program so that we can, you know, catch these problems early. So if that ever gets brought up, you know, write your senator, write your congressman, get them to take a look, pay close attention to what is going on. Those of you that have powerful telescopes, go ahead and join up with that cadre. Start being a backyard astronomer and tracking these kinds of things. You know, keep careful notes. You might be the savior of humanity one day. You never know. It's definitely worth an hour of your time every couple of nights to go out there and check on all the celestial bodies out there that shouldn't be moving too fast.
Indeed.
And, of course, just, you know, keep informed and keep up with space. That's about the end of it.
Never stop dreaming. Always have those awesome ideas.
That was more inspirational than I was thinking it was going to be for a talk about, you know, global extinction events. But I'll take what I can get.
Such as it is.
All right. I think that about wraps it for us tonight. So this here is the Pusher Robot.
And it's the Shover Robot.
And you have gone down the stairs.
Down the stairs.
About that space, space travel. I'm all about that space, about that space, space travel. I'm all about that space, space travel. I'm all about that space, space.